Hey everybody, welcome to the Jiu-Jitsu Stories. We got special guest. We haven't done a Jiu-Jitsu Stories episode in a while. It's been at least 6 months. And this special guest answered the call by email. Miss Isabella, how's it going?
Hello, going good actually, stuck at home. But
yeah, unique circumstances, that's for sure. So, I don't know. We'll see when we publish this, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be during the quarantine because I don't think we're getting out of our houses anytime soon, Bella.
No, definitely not. Not getting on the mats either for a while.
Yes, yes, yes. That's painful. It's just so painful, really. But you know, hopefully, like it's for the greater good. how have you been dealing with life in quarantine, self-isolation?
I think I've been a little bit in denial, to be perfectly honest. Although all of my work has kind of gone out the window. So I've picked up a casual job at the chemist near me, which is actually my job back in 2016.
Oh, awesome. Back at it.
Yeah. Walked back into the store and asked for my job back. But yeah, because I'm still working, I'm almost in denial of the fact that we have to be inside all the time. But
okay. Well, no jiu-jitsu, that's one thing as well. And it's tough. It's so hard. I think I get to about 2 day mark and I'm looking to choke someone. I'm going to like start double legging somebody or just pretend choke or like flip them over my head or something like that. And we've got no jiu-jitsu now. We haven't had jiu-jitsu since, probably the 23rd of March.
Jeez.
24th maybe. Yeah, then we went in a couple times, like a few times the week after, just to do like some videos and some stuff online. And it's been difficult, man. It's been tough.
Yeah, I think before the PCYC closed, Ben and I had gone down and rolled for about an hour. Like it was a very flowy roll, but it was about definitely for about an hour.
Yeah.
And Danny and Hian were on the other side of the mats also drilling and doing some reflection on how Hian went at comp, actually.
Nice.
But yeah, it's like a whole week off of the mats and you let it out in a full hour roll with barely any resting. But
it's beautiful, right? And then you feel so, so like exhausted.
Oh, yeah.
It was just so worth it. And just the feeling of having rolled yourself out, it's just nice. Like, and you go home, you just chill out, have a good sleep, and just ready for it again, whether it's that night or like the next day. The jiu-jitsu life, Bella. So tell us, the high jiu-jitsu stories first started by Mr. B-Rad. Shout out to him. I'm sure he's going to listen to this one. And it was all about, I just love, look, you hear about, there's a lot of different jiu-jitsu podcasts around the world. And there's a lot of special guests that are on there and a lot of people with big names and lots of titles to their names and like really famous. And they've sold a lot of DVDs on BJJ Fanatics and it's like, you want to hear them. And that's awesome. That's like one side of this sport, this art that we do. And on the other side, you just got the everyday people, you know, the everyday people who train and who have very similar, like, levels of passion and enthusiasm, but just maybe not on that stage per se. So that's what I love for this show. I love bringing it out there and just sharing people's stories and, you know, how they got into not just jiu-jitsu but the martial arts. And you've, from what I've seen, you've got a nice background, a rich background in martial arts. Where did it all start?
So I didn't actually realize how long it's been, but I looked back through old photos and found out that I started martial arts at the end of 2017.
Okay.
So I attended my first ever mixed martial arts class at a little school in Penrith. And I Pollitt's martial arts. And I still remember my first class, actually. I really enjoyed it because it was, they focused on taking someone down that was doing like a spinning reverse kick or something, and I thought it was just so cool.
Yeah, nice.
That was my first ever introduction to martial arts, and I stayed there for the better part of a year, maybe almost 2 years. and I moved into karate and then picked up Muay Thai as well. And then I also started.
Was that at Pollitt's as well? Yeah, the Muay Thai.
They were very well-rounded martial arts school. They had, they offered a lot. And it was a very small school, but they had heaps of gyms around like country Australia. Like they had one in Bathurst and another one in Orange, I think.
Nice.
Yeah, so I did Muay Thai there and karate for a really long time. I was about to grade for my purple belt by the time I stopped. And I also started Kempo Jiu-Jitsu, which is more like Japanese Jiu-Jitsu and focused on takedowns and submissions, but nothing really in between. So,
So, I guess kind of like, it wasn't Jiu-Jitsu, it was like the different stuff. How did you go training different martial arts at once? Like, because you had few there, so like did you doing them at once or doing them like separately? How did you go kind of juggling all of those at once?
Well, I actually, so I would make an effort to get to the gym at least 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And the classes, I'd be at the gym for about 3 hours every night, so 3 hours 3 times a week, and each class was roughly an hour, so I'd have like an hour of karate, an hour of Muay Thai, and then an hour of jits each time.
Yeah, nice.
And it was really fun. It was exhausting after a while.
I could imagine.
And I would get a lot of bruises and be very tired. And
I tell you what, especially the girls, like when they start jiu-jitsu, like the bruises, it looks like they're just getting like hit with a hammer on the shins a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But my wife and Ange started as well. Like she'd come home and she'd look at you, she'd show me all these bruises. I'm like, did you do the same class that I did? Like it looked really, really different. I guess that's a part of it as well. I want to go like before, what brought you into Pollitt's martial arts? Why?
As a teenager, I'd always been really interested in martial arts, but I never really had the guts to actually do it. There was a Taekwondo school near me actually that I considered going to, but I couldn't find anyone that would do it with me.
Okay.
So I just left it on the side.
And you really wanted someone to come in with you, right?
Yeah.
Why? What is it? What is it about someone or like what part of you relies on somebody else to come in and do it as well?
I think it's just having it be very foreign.
Yes, okay.
To go in with you would have made things a lot easier for me as a kid. Obviously now that I've like trained for a while, I don't really need a support person. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning, like I needed that, and that's why I started at Pollitt's, because one of my friends had recently started there and she's like, oh, I really enjoy it, you should come do a class with me one time. And that's like the push that I needed to get into it, and I ended up staying much longer than she did. She got a little bit busy, and it was, I don't know, I was hooked by the time I attended my first class, so I'm lucky that I had her to be there.
Yeah, I guess it's funny, you just need like a catalyst, right? Like something has to kind of push you into that door, because I talk to so many people every day, mostly about jiu-jitsu. Like, you know, if they, what do you do? Hey, I do jiu-jitsu. Hey, I've always, a big common reply is I always wanted to do that. I've always wanted to do jiu-jitsu. And it's like, well, come, you know, what's the problem? It's like, well, I don't know, I don't want to take that next step. And it's funny how like sometimes if you have a friend, somebody that you trust, it kind of gives you that little bit of a stepping stone into a place that you don't trust essentially, because you've never been there, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah, cool. So, all right. What got you excited with martial arts? Why were you always into martial arts? Still a little bit deeper.
Yeah, I was just thinking, I've actually never really thought about what got me interested in it. I think that, like, not so much the fighting aspect, but so much as the self-defense aspect, I've always found really cool. And being able to, and watching old, like, karate and kung fu movies as a kid, you'd think, man, they're so cool. They can, like, win all these competitions. And what, Daniel, like, kicked the dude in the face in Karate Kid.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. That's cool. Hey, like, and For me, it was Rocky. My brother-in-law was a Karate Kid. He watched that on repeat all the time. For me, it was Rocky. So I'd see Rocky like taking 1,000 punches to the face and then giving like 1,001, and that last punch is the one that completely KOs the person. And that was my perception of jiu-jitsu as well, like or just all martial arts. To be honest, like I thought martial arts like didn't work. I was one of those people like, karate's not going to work on me. If you go to kick me, I'm just going to punch you in the head and KO you. And then you get into the gym and you realize that it's completely different, right? So what were some of the things when you did start with Pollitz and you had your friend there, what were some things that were a challenge to you? What was different to your previous perception of what it's going to be? And what were some challenges for you?
Because I started with MMA, and that's it's all of the martial arts mixed together. So it's a little bit more unstructured than if you just start with karate, for example, I actually found that I enjoyed the randomness almost of mixed martial arts because you're more reactive to what happens. Whereas in karate, when I started that, I struggled a bit because it was so structured and because it was much slower. It was more of a focus on technique, which I grew to love. And I do actually still miss it every now and again. But again, karate is like a whole other story, to be honest.
How's it different to what we do now?
It's very old-fashioned. It's very traditional. A lot of the things that you learn are... I don't want to say that they don't work. I think you learn them in one way, as in, for example, we'll learn how to oopa, but obviously you have to kind of modify that oopa in an actual role. You can't just oopa and have it work. You have to be cognizant of your partner's weight and where they're balanced and all of that. Whereas in karate, you're taught all of the movements and you're meant to do them in that way when you're actually fighting and sparring. Okay. At least that might. Struggled with that a little bit.
Yeah, nice. So one thing you say is this idea of technique, and then the process of learning technique, and you like that, right? And then like slowness. So did you enjoy MMA more because it was what was the appeal for you? Like of doing MMA to doing karate, like why was MMA more appealing?
Initially it was more appealing because it was so much more fun. I think it was just because it's high, like fast paced, and you get your adrenaline pumping.
Yeah.
And because you're moving really quickly, you don't really need to focus on your technique as much. It's like you're throwing a punch, it'll connect. Whereas with karate, you have to have the right kind of depth to your stances, and you have to be able to hold that stance for a particular amount of time until your sensei tells you to stop, really. So that was what was different between the two, I'd say.
Yeah, awesome. It's just interesting, right? Because you get some beginners and just anyone really. Let's talk about a boxer size class, and you have a lot of people who go in with the boxer size, and you can hear pads banging, and you come out of it with a real sweat, and you're tired, and you're sore the next day, and you're like, oh, I've accomplished something. And it's interesting just to think about what people want to accomplish when it comes to the martial arts, like what gets them, and then what kind of encourages people to stay in the game, So what were some things that were difficult for you, like in order to maintain? You said your friend dropped off. Like what was tough at that time, if anything?
After I'd lost, but after my friend herself had stopped, actually, I didn't really find it hard to continue after she left. If anything, I found it more of a motivation to continue.
Okay.
Yeah. More because, she tried to come back about a month after she stopped and had, obviously because she hadn't been in class, I progressed so much further, and seeing how far I progressed in just a month was a massive motivator for me, because I thought, if I never stop, then I'm just going to keep improving, right? So
I
took it less of a negative that I didn't have a friend in class anymore, and more of a, I can probably just keep going. If I've made it this far on my own, then I can just, you know, I don't really need another person to train anymore, do I?
I guess so. Like, that's, well, you got the whole like, school, you know, because you come in, like, it's that safety net, you know, you come in with a safety net of your friends, and then you come in and you see that the school is full of just beautiful people as well, hopefully. And you know, your friend isn't as important eventually, right? Because you've come into
a whole network
ecosystem, you know, of more people, and people who might be more interested, you know, than what your friend was, for example. Which is cool. So, all right, moving on. Like, after Pollitt's, how come you left Pollitt's?
Well, I left Pollitt's because I'd actually started looking more into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because that's when I met Ben. And so we started talking, and he was telling me all about your gym. He was telling me all about Haya, and I was getting really excited. I wanted to come visit. And I eventually started to not like Pollitt's as much because of the style of training. And I think I was clashing a little bit with one of the instructors as well. And I didn't really want to be in an environment where I would come to dislike the martial art.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of not wanting to attend class anymore because of whatever was going on. So I eventually made the decision to leave Pollitt's to pursue Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu instead.
What about Jiu-Jitsu? Why? Okay, Benny. Okay, Benny. Yes. Benny's the number one reason. But what else about Jiu-Jitsu made it appealing to you? Was it only Benny talking about it and getting you excited for it? Or what else had you seen? What was going through your head when you decided to, all right, put the other three martial arts, put them aside, and then get started with this new one?
Okay, well, yeah, Benny was a very big factor.
He's a catalyst.
I mean, one of the biggest catalysts for sure. I also had another friend who was training at a Gracie Baja in West Ryde, and she brought me to one of her classes, and I really enjoyed that too. Mm-hmm. And that was when I was kind of flip-flopping at Pollitt's a little bit about whether or not I'd leave or stay there and you know, just grit my teeth. But attending an actual Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class, even though I had no idea what was going on, really, it was just really different. And watching the culture of that school and how welcoming they were to me was really nice. And I wanted to train at Pollitt's and also at her mm-hmm. her gym. But obviously I couldn't do that. And Gracie Baja was like, sorry, you can't just drop in every now and again. I was like, okay, I get that. Now I'm going to have to leave Pollitt's and find somewhere to train. That gym was way too far for me to even fathom going to regularly.
West Ryde?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, although if I think about it, it's only about a half hour to 40 minute drive, which is about the same amount of time that took me to get to King's.
Okay, yeah.
So I could have gone there anyway.
Well, that's, yeah, nice. So, like, where we're at. Tell me. So, like, you get into jiu-jitsu, like, you enjoy it. I just want to touch on one thing a little bit. And I think this is something that a lot of people go through, and I just like your perspective on it. When you have to leave the gym, like, what was the challenging part of leaving that gym? What was difficult about that? I think I asked you that before, but let's talk about that a little bit more.
I felt like I was cheating on Pollitt's a little bit.
Yeah, I get that. I felt that before as well. Yeah. Why? What was it about it that made you feel like you were cheating?
I just had spent so much time there, you know. At that point, it was maybe almost 2 years. I had spent so long training there. And, yeah, I had built up a really good network and had a lot of friends at the gym. And by the time it came for me to leave, I felt like I was not betraying them, but almost like we were breaking up. Definitely like we were breaking up, actually. I was very nervous. I drove to the gym. I hadn't attended class for about 2 weeks or maybe 3 weeks, and I was sitting in the car. I was very nervous. And I approached my sensei and I was like, Jess, I think I'm going to have to cancel my membership. And I don't know if she saw it coming or not, because I hadn't been in class for a few weeks. But there was a cancellation fee that I had to pay for a couple weeks or a month. It was fine. And I had actually gotten some phone calls from the head instructor. And he was like, oh, you know, you don't have to go. We could just give you free karate privates. I was like,
oh, right.
Yeah, they actually called me and asked me to stay, and were offering me things to stay. And I was like, well, that's really nice, but I don't think so.
The milk's on the table, as Professor said.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was done. By then it was done and dusted. Yeah, yeah, it's just interesting. Like, I've my first gym as well, they were my peoples and I loved them to bits, you know, and there was definitely things about it that I didn't like. Which was, you know, that was there, but in amongst that was just you're surrounded with friendships and like just great memories and awesome experiences. And you think about the blood, like the blood, sweat and tears, you know, that you put on those mats. And just to think sometimes it is like a breakup, really. But then you also feel like it's best for you that you leave and you go and pursue something that's more within your interests or something that you think is going to work better for you.
Yeah.
So has jiu-jitsu worked better for you than what the first martial arts did?
Yeah, definitely. And okay, so I have like a little story just in terms of...
Please.
So when I was doing karate and Muay Thai and all of that, I thought, oh, there's like a self-defense aspect to karate. And I thought, oh, I should be able to, you know, defend myself if something happens. You'd think that it would help you. And then I found myself in a situation at work at one point with a little bit of inappropriate touching that I didn't really want to be happening from a fellow person. And I remember thinking at that moment, I was like, oh, I could like knee this person in the nuts or step on his foot or do something and he literally wouldn't see it, but I couldn't move at all. So there's a whole fight or flight aspect, which I understand. But I remember thinking afterwards, I was like, man, I literally couldn't do anything. Like, even though I've gone through all of these self-defense things, I couldn't, because I'd never been put under that kind of stress before, I guess. Although now doing jiu-jitsu and with the knowledge that even though I'm underneath someone who is like 80 kilos, 90 kilos, they're in top mount and I can't do anything, I'm yes. fine, you know, just gotta breathe. As long as I can't hit you, as long as I can't like get your neck, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge like shift, I think, that I've noticed. Oh, I'm a little bit emotional.
Man, well tell me, that's why jiu-jitsu is so beautiful, because your heart and soul is in this moment right now, you know, like there's every single part of you wants to survive, you know, and of course you can tap, and tapping is like, is happens as well. And it's okay to tap, but you're not thinking at that moment when someone's got a strangle on you and like you're close to tapping, you're thinking about defense, you're thinking about how to avoid, like you're not thinking about anything else, you know? And so that's why I think it invokes such beautiful emotions in you. And I think that's why jiu-jitsu can be so powerful, because there is this emotion inherent in all the things that we do. So you said that jiu-jitsu is currently, it's working for you, right? You're enjoying it a lot more. You were at West Ryde, but then you couldn't go there. And I remember this, you were kind of making that little decision. You were going around to different schools and wondering what the best place was for you. And so what happens next?
So I started asking around to find out if there are any gym recommendations for gyms like kind of closer to me. Obviously, like I did want to come to higher, and I did drop in every now and again with Ben, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. And that honestly just facilitated my decision to like choose jiu-jitsu overall. And so I was really intent on finding a gym, and I would ask around. And Ben asked in the HJJ lads chat for me if there are any gym recommendations. And so a few of them popped up. There's a few gyms near me. There's Sydney West Martial Arts, which is like 20 minutes drive down the road. There's King's Academy,
mm-hmm.
which I ended up going to.
Elvis.
Yeah. shout out to Elvis. But I remember that those two were the main ones that I kind of tossed up between. And I ended up choosing Kings because, oh, I don't know. Someone said that I would get murked if I went to Sydney West because they were really, like, really tough and they were really big dudes. And they're like, you're such a small person, Belle. Like, you might get hurt. Maybe you should go to Kings. They're more friendly to beginners and women. I was like, okay, I'll go to Kings.
Well, yeah. I'm sure Sydney West has smaller people as well. Hey, they're very, yeah. Like, they do really, really well in competition as well. Mr. Luke Martin. I trained with Luke at SPMA beginning, yeah.
Well, Ben and I went there recently just to drop in before all the gyms closed.
Oh, yeah.
And it was great. Actually, yeah, Luke did say, he's like, oh, we've got Ben here from a gym in the city and I used to train with his coach. And
oh, right.
Yeah, it was a great school. I've actually been a few times because it is really close to home. And if I feel like training, I'll just go in every now and again. But honestly, I kind of wish that I didn't listen to that person's advice about the school and that I'd get hurt there, because if anything, the instruction that they have there is quite similar to in terms of the detail of the techniques. It's very similar to our school, I reckon. Just mm-hmm. They break it down step by step, which is what I love.
I remember Luke. Sometimes, like, there was the teacher, maybe it was Elvis or Anthony, that couldn't do the Saturday Nogi class. So there's a few times that Luke jumped on and started teaching. And honestly, credit to that dude for, like, just being in love with leg locks before they were cool. Like, he was the leg lock guy at SPMA, and that was what, like, 10 years ago. And then clearly his leg lock system has gotten a lot better. And you've seen what, you know, the whole, like, all the leg lock game has done to sport jiu-jitsu now, and just how vast it is. I think Sydney West is going to do really well in comp coming up as they grow as a school. You know, if they, Luke's a smart guy, he's a good coach. And I think they're going to do really well for sure. When you did make that decision, let's run with that. Like, you didn't want to get hurt. Was that on the forefront of your mind? Was it convenience sake? What was it about it? Were you scared, or were you making that your own decision about that? Because you'd been in there a few times right beforehand, or you just avoided Luke's initially?
I actually avoided it initially. So I only dropped in last year. Okay. But getting hurt wasn't a factor to me until it was mentioned. Like, I didn't really think about it until I thought about it, until someone mentioned it. And I actually sat back and I thought, if I, you know, I, again, leg locks, Sydney West has this reputation of leg locks because of Luke, but after going there a few times, they've actually got a pretty well-rounded, like, curriculum. Mm-hmm. It's that they actually teach leg locks more than other gyms might. But I didn't really think about getting hurt ever. And I guess that's because at Pollitt's, we didn't really get hurt. I was very, very bruised. Like, John, if you were to see any of my bruise photos from when I was at Pollitt's, there would be nothing compared to what I get now, genuinely.
Well, that's got to do with, like, the striking, right? Kicking and...
Yeah. Yes, it's the striking. And... with takedowns, they had, like, really tiny puzzle mats.
Oh, right.
And, yeah, so it was landing on really hard surfaces, despite breakfalls.
Yeah, despite any breakfall, landing on, like, almost concrete. It was still going to hurt, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow, okay. That's cool. So then you're at Kings. Suddenly, what I heard you say, because you started MMA and you enjoyed MMA over karate because it was a bit faster, a bit more dynamic, less technique based. And now you're talking about Luke's gym and, you know, talking about, I really like it because of the level of detail of the technique. So I'm already hearing, like, a little bit of a circle in your mentality, in your interest.
Yeah. You know, I actually think that all started happening around when I was at Pollitt's, just because of all the different martial arts. and they'll require a different mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Like with MMA, very fast, very unstructured. And then I went into karate, which was the complete opposite, and I didn't like it at first. And the more I did it, the more I appreciated it. I also did Muay Thai, and with Muay Thai, there was a whole different system of techniques to that too, which I didn't realize. I thought Muay Thai was just like kickboxing, just kicks in it, but it's got actual technique to it too. And there's differences between a karate kick and a Muay Thai kick that I didn't know until doing it previously. And so I actually think that in my time at Pollitt's, that whole mindset shift happened there in that school. And it's just become more focused on technique now that I think I forgot about, I wouldn't say forgot about it. I would say maybe I let go of that technique focus a little bit when I went to King's. And then I started training at higher a little bit more. And then it came back. And now that's my main focus.
Awesome. That's like, it's just really interesting to see like the progression as well. You know, that's what I love about doing this. And when I see a white belt come in, or not even a white belt, they don't have their white belt yet, like a complete beginner. And some people come in for a class and it's an intro class. Like I'd usually bring someone who's never done jiu-jitsu before, they'll do the intro class. And it's slow for a reason. Like I give people ample time to practice a technique. You know, so we might do, rather than doing 10 exercises in a warm-up for fundamentals, we'll do 5, you know, for intro. And then we might just do 2 techniques. I really try to leave it basic to 2 techniques for intro class. So when someone's doing 1 technique, they got enough time to practice it, and I can go around and, you know, like the high students can go around and like troubleshoot, you know, and we respect every technique, and you really try to work with it first before we move on to the next one. And some beginners like just maybe don't like that, you know, and they come in and maybe they haven't sweat as much as they would have sweat for like a boot camp, and they're like, hey, nah, we actually want something a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more athletic maybe. And I wouldn't say frustrates me, it disappoints me, like, because like, man, you're going to enjoy jiu-jitsu so much if you give it a chance. And so I don't want to teach it to students to make it attractive from the beginning. Like we can do like a jiu-jitsu camp class, you know, jits camp. You know, that's almost like a boot camp, but jiu-jitsu, and have people doing 1,000 burpees and like a million hip escapes and, you know, screaming up and down, going in the air and having fun like that. And then get people really excited and really sweaty. That's easy. But the beauty of jiu-jitsu and the beauty of the martial arts is finding that leverage and finding, working through that technique in order to find it and make it easier and easier. So I guess seeing how you're going from like, hey, I want to be that karate kid that I was watching on TV as well. And then now, like what I'm seeing, especially when I see you on the mats at Higher, you're listening and you're like, you're refining things and you're staying after class and you're like practicing and you're drilling techniques with Benny and with everybody else. And I just think that's a really beautiful part of the journey. So how do you think jiu-jitsu and that whole process there, how does that help you when you're off the mats? Maybe that's when you're stuck in quarantine during the coronavirus crisis, or maybe that's when you're dealing with that self-defense situation, that fight or flight. How has your learning of jiu-jitsu and martial arts so far, how does that help you off the mat?
I'm really fortunate to not have had to, you know, be in any self-defense situation since then.
Mm-hmm.
I would I feel like if I was to be, then I would be able to handle it in a much more different way. Although I do feel a lot safer like at night or being on the train really late or just in a situation
what part of your training has allowed you now to feel safer from when you were actually in that situation? Because I feel like I glossed over that situation, but I want to get back to it. I want to get into the nitty gritty of that. Yeah, so what's changed in your training so that now you feel comfortable to deal with somebody, an aggressor that's coming at you off the mat?
being able to stay calm in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you know, being in bottom out under someone that's significantly larger and trying to break your arms or choke you out is very stressful.
Yeah.
But it's like breathing. Breathing is something I've had to work on a lot. And when early days and I used to roll with Ben, he would always like stop mid-roll and just remind me to breathe because I would have just seized my entire body up.
Yeah.
Well, just relax. It's like, just breathe, be nice and loosey-goosey, it's all fine. And then we'd proceed and it would be okay. And it was having that constant reminder that it's okay and I just have to relax and then I'll be able to see what's going on around me is, I think, something that I've been able to translate into every day. Yeah.
How else in other parts of your day, how does that relaxation, how does that skill that you're building up, you know, okay, I'm stuck underneath Ben's sweaty body, underneath slide control, and Ben's sweat is dripping on my face and in my eyeballs. Oh, I don't want to scream. But then from there, it goes on to okay, I can relax. I can calm down. This is all going to be okay. How else does it, perhaps does it affect your how you work with people, you know, or how you work at, how you're at work?
Yeah, well, so for work, I'm basically for my whole career so far, I mean, in my working life, I've mostly been doing guest interactions and I need to be able to stay pleasant, you know, even if I'm really stressed out, even if I'm, you know, under the pump with a lot of customers in retail, or if I'm at the aquarium, for example, it gets really stressful if I'm trying to do a talk in front of a bajillion people. I forget everything. Once you start to freak out, you forget everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you know about these fish that you've been working with for 3 years, you forget. But it's again coming back to remembering to breathe and remembering that it's okay, remembering that you've done these things so many times before,
mm-hmm.
that you just kind of have to trust yourself and it'll just come back to you as long as you stay calm. And
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And I guess it leads me on to my next question. This is a big one, but what's the biggest reason? What's one of the biggest reasons that you do jiu-jitsu like now, as opposed to when you got started? Has that changed?
A little bit. I don't know. I just couldn't imagine life without jiu-jitsu at this point, to be honest.
Sounds like you're hooked. So you have the bug. You know, like you got the coronavirus. You don't have the coronavirus, but like when you get some people bug. Like, what's that?
The jiu-jitsu bug.
The jiu-jitsu bug. It's the same thing. Like it doesn't catch everybody, but it catches some people and you've got it. You got it forever and it's just done. So when you're off the mats and when your school's closed for months and months and months, you'd say that to somebody else, like, hey, man, I haven't been able to train jiu-jitsu. And they're like, oh, boo-hoo, have a cry. That's like, yeah, but something like that. Like, this is my life. Like, I need to choke people. I need to get choked. I need to feel people's pressure on me. And it's tough. It's tough, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there's many reasons why you like jiu-jitsu, right? You can't imagine life without it. But because Benny does it, maybe.
A little bit.
There's lots. Like, there's, I think that's something big, and I think we can unpack that in so many different ways. But here's another one. This is maybe a little bit better for you. Like, how you studied music therapy, right, at uni? Yeah. So can you give us a little bit of an explanation about music therapy and what that's all about?
Yep. So music therapy, it's an allied health profession. It's pretty niche. It's very new, especially in Australia. But it essentially, it uses music to achieve non-musical goals. For example, I can work with kids with autism, and if they have trouble with social skills and taking turns, we can use a musical game to help them develop that skill. And the whole purpose of music therapy is to help them learn that skill so they can then apply that into everyday life, which I'm now seeing is very similar to jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. That's my next question. Like, give me some connections there, because I just to tell like you like and people, music therapy. There's this one chapter in this book, Norman Doidge. It's How the Brain Heals Itself. I think that's the title of the book, or it might be his second book. I think that was his first one. Anyways, I can tell people that later. But Norman Doidge is the author, and he's got like all these different modalities and how they help people. And they're just modalities that I didn't really think about. So the Feldenkrais method is one of them. And one big one is speech therapy. And I haven't read that book for a while, and I can brush up on it as well. But it's just really interesting how they use music therapy as a means for learning and as a means for using the body, the brain in different ways. Tell me, how do you see something like jiu-jitsu linking up with music therapy? Are there similarities in terms of learning, in terms of, the ability to use one in order to come to an outcome in somewhere else, if that makes sense?
Yeah, kind of. So in terms of jiu-jitsu and breaking something down into little chunks to learn a technique or to, you know, that is something that's a good way for me to learn. And in music therapy, that's another way that you can also break down big social skills like taking turns. Like we take that for granted because we can take turns, you know, because that's something that we've learned. But for young kids who struggle to learn that, breaking it down into something that they can actually relate to, like a game and like a song, or, you know, that breaking it down makes it easier for them to learn and then, you know, put into their normal lives. Does that kind of answer it? I don't know.
Well, 100%. Like, because, yeah, like breaking things down, taking turns, collaborating.
Yeah.
You know, I guess like you're in a dance with somebody else in jiu-jitsu, and it's like you have to pay attention to what that person is doing in order to create the stimulus, the data for your next step. And I guess maybe when people jostle, like it's with somebody else and they're kind of connected with somebody else. Maybe, you know, with your clients, like their jiu-jitsu, their opponent, or the person that they're collaborating with, the thing that they're collaborating with is the music, maybe, you know, and that kind of helps with that. And I don't know, that's something that I really thoroughly enjoy. Just this idea of learning and how you can learn, you know, and you can learn through so many different ways, so many different modalities for learning. And doing it with kids is extra fun as well. So you've been doing the kids program with us. Bit of background. Bella comes into the kids program. Bella asked me to come in. John, can I come in on the kids program and help out? Sure thing, Bella. No worries. Love having helpers with us. And you're always here. How come? What excites you about teaching kids jiu-jitsu?
Well, I just like working with kids in general. Hey, on Mondays when I come to the kids class, in the Monday mornings, I would be at work at a preschool in Wynyard doing music classes.
Okay.
So yeah, that's my morning job on a Monday. And I like doing jiu-jitsu with the kids just because, I mean, I love kids, you know. But I also learn, so I've learned a lot in the kids class too.
Why?
Kids are fearless, John. There's so much to learn from kids. They just do things. You tell them to do something and for a second they'll be like, oh, I'm a bit scared. But for the most part, they'll just do it. Mm-hmm. I just think that there's a lot that I've learned from them in terms of not being afraid and just trusting your body. And trusting that, you know, if you can't do a handstand into a forward roll, you can still just try it. And even if you eat crap on the mats afterward, it's still fine. And you can still get up. And it's, but even because you have to break things down so much more for the kids in terms of the techniques, even for a forward roll. I couldn't do a forward roll. I told you this before, that I couldn't really do a forward roll and backwards roll slowly like you guys do.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never been taught. People were always just like, just do it, you know, it'll be fine, you'll figure it out.
Jesus, just do it.
Mm-hmm. I know, and I'm get it. And I remember that when I was watching you teach it to the kids, that I would do it as slowly as they would do it. And I eventually figured it out. And same for the backwards rolls. I could only backwards roll over one shoulder. And now I can do both. But I don't know. That's one of the main reasons that I like coming to the kids' class. Not just because I enjoy it and I like playing games with them and they're really cute, but because there's a lot to learn from them.
Yeah, that's... Isn't that interesting, you know, that you couldn't do a forward roll, like a backward roll over, let's say, the left shoulder. And then it takes you, as you said before, in the music therapy, like you break things down. That's what I do in class. Like I will break down a forward roll sometimes, and some people need it. Whereas that's how I learned things. Hey, just dropping. We learned forward rolls in the warm-up. It wasn't even learning how to do a forward roll. We just do forward rolls. And then you're a beginner, you just start thrusting yourself into it. And then you're mostly scared about other people, like you getting in other people's way. So you just kind of rush yourself along. Yeah. Like it's almost selfish to stop and do it slowly so you can learn it yourself if you're not in that same environment. So as you said, with music therapy, like we break things down a little bit, right? And you say, okay, extend your arms out and then bring your ear and your shoulder to the ground. and then... I guess when you break things down into little bite-sized pieces like that, you can start working with your brain in a way that allows you to understand it. And your brain can do it. Your body can do a backward roll. You just didn't know how. Like you hadn't taken the time and like gone through the process of learning how to do it. And I guess with what you're saying, like kids don't really have that, the judgment maybe of, who the fuck, what an idiot. I don't know how to do a forward roll. I'm an idiot. And some kids do have that. Like some kids come in, they're like 3 or 4 years old and they've already got these hangups. And it's like, where did you learn that? Because you'll speak to one of their, like their parents, and their parents are really cool people and like encouraging them to do it as well. And kids just develop these little personalities at a young age. And that's really interesting, like to deal with. So you'll see in the kids class, we have all these different personalities and they come together. And the thing that I like with the kids class, and maybe you see it, is I try to give them the freedom to like to be and to just to be themselves and to be kids. But in saying that, you also need limits as well, like because if you gave them like a whole mile, like they'll take that. Whereas sometimes it's nice to give them a little bit of slack at a time, you know, and kind of reel them in. Maybe that's the same thing with jiu-jitsu as well. Like, here's a question. Like, how do you think you learn jiu-jitsu best? Like someone that's learning from day one, what are some strategies you'd give them for learning? How have you approached learning now? How long have you been training jiu-jitsu for?
Oh, geez. I want to say just over a year of just jiu-jitsu. Okay. Yeah.
Well, yeah. In martial arts, like 2017, you said, right? So 3 years plus. So you've gone to different schools, you've seen different styles. What are some things that work for you on the mats?
I think for me, I mean, we've touched on this so much, but breaking things down literally step by step really, really helps. Mm-hmm. And being able to... When I'm learning a technique, I think I might have picked this up from Ben, but I talk myself through the steps as I'm doing them. And like I'm very cognizant of like which arm needs to go where, and I won't move until I've got it in the right spot. Because I know that if I rush it, it's all gonna go to crap and it's not gonna be very good at all. Mm-hmm. So I don't like that. I like being very methodical with my learning.
Has it always been like that? Sorry.
No. I don't think so. No. I think that, again, actually, the talking through definitely came from Ben, like verbally speaking it out, because that also became a way for me to verify to Ben that I was doing the right thing. Like, if I say the wrong thing, obviously he's going to be like, actually, Bell, you know, what do you think you're meant to do next? And then I'll think about it again. But the thinking methodically, I think was from karate as well. because in karate there's, you know, katas.
Yes.
Like, yeah. And in those katas, you have to get the right shape, technique, but you're essentially making a shape with your body, mm-hmm. with each movement. If you don't have the right, like if you don't have the right depth in a squat, or if you don't have the right angle in your foot, then it's different. So you have to have everything correct before you can move on. And we had a whole grading system, which meant that you would know if you're doing it right or not. Mm-hmm. But that methodical thinking, I think, came from there. I was never very methodical through school. Oh, okay, no, that's a lie. But I lost that a little bit during uni because it was different again.
Yeah, yeah.
But methodical thinking is how I learn best. Yeah, doing it all step by step.
Isn't that funny? I was also, well, look, year 11 and 12, I became a bit of a nerd. Like, but before that, I was not a nerd. Like, I hardly did work. But year 11, a little bit, year 12, I ramped it up and I really started studying. And I was also very methodical and very organized in my thinking as well. And it's funny how your habits off the mats kind of determine how you're going to work best on the mats. And so I'm not really like, I don't work well in chaos, like in chaotic situations. Like I sometimes can enjoy it, but let's say my workspace and like my emails, like I want them done at a certain time and I try to have everything structured because that's how I feel I work best. So I guess with you breaking things down into those little steps can help. How has Benny, how else does he help you out on the mats? As in, okay, so my question is, Benny, guys, is Bella's boyfriend, and Benny started training. He's a blue belt at Hai Jiu-Jitsu, and Bella and Benny are always on the mats together, and shout out to Mr. Benny. And how is it training with when your significant other, when your partner is on the mats with you as well? Any tips on that? Any observations about what's easy about and what's hard and et cetera?
I found that, I mean, I don't know if it's just because we drill together so often, but like my favorite, and or I don't know if it's because we're dating either, but my favorite drilling and training partner is Ben. I know that there's a pretty decent size difference between us. So it's, if I was to compete, for example, I'd have to train with someone more my size. But in terms of training with Ben, because he's a color belt and has been training for so long, and he himself is very pedantic with technique, mm-hmm. and that helps me learn. And being able to go to him and be like, am I doing this right? Can you please show me? It really helps me with my learning. It's really facilitated what I want to say is growth since joining the school, but even since before it. I remember being at King's, I didn't really have that kind of learning, breaking things down, because it's a very big school. So there's not really much one-on-one time with you and a coach. So having Ben to then work on things with outside of training at King's was almost like getting, like having privates.
Which, pretty much, yeah. Because he's there for you, and anything you ask him, I'm sure he's there to help you. Privates, there you go.
Yeah, just find a significant other that's a color belt in jiu-jitsu and you're set.
Yeah, and Benny's doing awesome. And Benny's a learner. That's why he got his belt. And I love having, like, that's what a beautiful student is, someone that's coming to class to learn all the time. And the thing that I love about Benny is since the beginning, like, he's here, he's helping himself, but he's doing that by helping others as well. And maybe that's a reason why, you know, the way you come to kids class, like, you know, Benny's there and he gets benefit, you know, because he's helping other people, but he's also doing it because he wants to, and he wants to see everybody progress and learn. And so you're very lucky. Are there any times, you can be as honest as you want, any times that it's annoying having somebody, your boyfriend on the mats? So is there any downside to it? And do you want me to go first? I don't know.
I'm not tiny, but I'm pretty small compared to Ben, and every now and again he'll just squash me And it'll be an accident, obviously, because I know that when we roll, Ben is purely defensive. Not purely defensive. Obviously, he tries to be a little bit offensive, but he doesn't do it a lot because he knows that that's not the kind of training that both of us will benefit from. Because if he's to try and attack me, he's been training for, 3 years? We're not going to learn very much from it. But every now and again, I will get squashed, and I'll just be complaining about that. But also because he's recently become really interested in leg locks, which I'm learning a lot about. I may not be doing as much practical learning as he is, but theoretically it's nice to be able to be aware of all these different positions, all these different things. Oh my God, I'm like automatically straying away from complaining about Ben.
Sorry, that might have been a loaded question. No, okay, I'll tell you what. I'd like to get some insight, you know, because at least for me, training with when my wife was coming to jiu-jitsu before she got preggers, it was great. For the most part, it was great. And then there was parts of it that did get in the way, because I'll tell it now too, I don't mind. But for example, you're just not the same with your... with my wife, I can say things to my wife that I can't say to you. And it's just natural. It's not that I'm going to be an asshole to my wife, but for example, we're doing the elbow escape once. And then I was going around the room. I didn't think I was being rude, but I was going around the room. I was helping everybody out. And it comes time for Ange. And then Ange did it. And then she gave me a look. And it was a look as though, what are you talking about? Look. And I was like, what do you mean? What am I talking about? And I had a little I raised my voice I hadn't raised my voice like that to any other student. But when I spoke to Andrew, suddenly I raised my voice and she made me out that I became a monster. But I don't think I became a monster, but I wasn't overly sensitive to the situation that we were in. And it was just really interesting because if I did that at home, I'd be like, oh, sorry. If I accidentally snapped, I might say, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to come off like that, you know, for example. Whereas on the mats, it's all just really different. but yes, you don't have to complain about Benny on the mats. That wasn't my point there.
Not actually. Now that you say that, it does remind me of a time that it's pretty much a change of tone thing. Whereas where you were talking to Ange, and it's you wouldn't talk to Ange any differently to anyone. Oh, well, I don't know. You spoke to Ange differently to the other. Apparently spoke to Ange differently
yes.
to the other.
Thank you. Yes. Apparently.
actually, I had that, except the opposite. So I wanted to go over some techniques for a King's grading.
Yeah,
and I hadn't had the chance to really drill those things at King's. So when I came into higher on the weekend, I was like, Ben, can you help me out? He's like, yeah, sure, I'll be your uki. You know, what do you want me to do? I started doing one of the techniques and he started immediately correcting me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, sorry, why are you correcting me? Because I have to do this. This is how I was taught. I have to be graded on the way that I was taught it, obviously. It's a different school, so they teach it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
He started correcting it immediately, but he was like, I'm not, we discussed it afterwards and he said that he doesn't talk to me differently. He doesn't give me special treatment on the mats just because we're dating, which I actually appreciate. But also I think a tiny part of me kind of wants a little bit softer than you're doing this wrong. But not that he says it that way.
Well, it's tough, man. It's tough because if you give too little, then, you know, it's like, oh, you're being too nice to me. If you're giving too much, then it's like, oh, you're not being nice enough. So there's definitely there's different circumstance for sure, and that calls for different behaviors sometimes, I guess. So any tips then for couples that train together?
I think because Ben and I have actually discussed the ways that we like to train outside of being on the mats, and I think that's why we've been able to have such productive sessions on the mats and be able to drill and train together so much without getting sick of it or super annoyed.
Yeah,
discussing the best ways that you've learned techniques and being aware that, or just if you like, if you don't want to be told what to do in a particular moment, like if you want to figure it out on your own, just be like, I would like to figure this out. Just verbalize everything, essentially. Just communicate. Yeah. I know,
that's a big word. That's a big word. And I think it's just so important that people communicate.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like there's nothing else I could really say in terms of advice that wouldn't lead back to communication, to be honest. Because it's not really, it's all going to be very unique for each couple. The ways that you train together, the ways that you don't train together as well. Because I can't give Ben the wars on the mats that he wants sometimes. Like sometimes he'll be like, I just really want to go. And I'll be like, I can't do that. So it's being aware of that as well. Like sometimes like our roles together are very playful and more me attacking him than anything. And it's just funny because I like, you know, trying things out that I wouldn't ordinarily try on someone my size or someone that was really new, you know, like I wouldn't want to freak them out by trying to mount a triangle them straight away. But on Benny, I can feel comfortable doing that.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And we can also talk about your strategy with Benny as well, because if you notice that Benny's always being defensive until he's not, right? That's beautiful. Like, so what Benny's doing there, see, that's some beautiful Pedro Sauer jiu-jitsu, is he's creating little traps in certain areas. So he doesn't need to attack you because he's just going to let you fall into his counterattacks. You know, so there's times when Benny, like, he doesn't have to always be the hammer with you, because he is in control of the whole situation, which means he's happy to kind of navigate it in any which particular way, you know. And that's what I love. I love to hear that about Benny. And good job, Benny, because that shows that he has gears, you know, and that's why he's such a good training partner. And that's why you enjoy training with him. That's why he's your favorite training partner. You know, I'm sure if he was, like, regardless of whether he was your boyfriend or not, Benny, like, you know, you get that from everybody that, you know, Benny's like so awesome to train with. He does sweat a lot. I'm joking. You know, but there are different gears, you know, and it's not just like, okay, I'm going to go super soft now, or I'm going to go super hard. It's like, he has a Bella gear, you know, he has probably like a complete beginner gear. And then he has like a Danny, like another blue belt gear. And then he has my gear, you know, where he's training with me as well. And, you know, he does well like that too. So I love hearing that. And I think that's the aim of a martial artist, to have control, you know, and not just to kind of press a button. Okay. Now I'm jiu-jitsu man. All right. Go super crazy at all times, regardless of who it is, you know, like that's what I think that's skill. So good job, Benny. One last question, Bella, cause we've been at it. I don't know how long we've been at it, but it seems like a while. Where do you see yourself going with jiu-jitsu? What's the end of the road here? What's the road?
There's definitely no actual end to the road, Jenny. Just, I feel like I'm here forever. I don't see myself stopping anytime. I won't even say anytime soon, just ever. I don't really see myself ever stopping. Obviously, I was a little bit bummed out, I think, at some point early this year, thinking about when I finally signed up to hire, and I was just thinking about, because I almost didn't do that. I almost didn't. I almost stayed at King's for a little bit longer. And I was just thinking about how I didn't, belts don't matter. I get that belts don't matter, but a little part of me was like, oh, I don't want to be I want to be a higher jiu-jitsu blue belt. But I was like, but I can't, I've stopped putting timelines on my jiu-jitsu journey because, sorry about the pen. I've stopped putting timelines.
Sorry about the pen too.
No, I've stopped putting timelines on my jiu-jitsu journey because, like, there are going to be so many things that stop you from training, like this quarantine, for example. Yeah. But, like, you can't control it. All you can really control, something that I've learned and had to accept, all you can control is being on the mats in the first place. Like when you're able to, at least, is actually showing up to train and just refining techniques for yourself and for, I mean, we've got a curriculum, which is great. And I've slowly started working through the white to blue syllabus just because I like learning methodically.
Yeah.
We've been watching the videos on the Pedro Sauer, you know, online thing. But it's just kind of helps me think it through in terms of I'm just learning it for me and because I really enjoy doing it. I'm not doing it because I think that there's, you know, an end point where I'll be able to finish and be like, yeah, that's it. I've completed it. There's no completing it. It's mm-hmm. just more learning. So there's no end to my jiu-jitsu journey, John. That is my too long didn't read answer.
Oh, I love it. Thanks, Bella. That was fun. And I wanted to ask you a few pointers, you know, about like the different schools and like training with Benny. And I think we got through all of that and then some. Thanks. As you said, when this whole thing is over, we'll be back on the mats and we'll be back on the mats with the kids and we'll be back on the mats with the homies and the homettes, the ladies and and just the whole crew. Like I miss everybody. I just miss being on the mats and just talking shit, really. Sorry. And just all of it. What do you miss from the mats the most?
I miss being able to lose myself in jiu-jitsu. Hey, like being able to just leave everything else behind and just be on the mats learning and rolling and having fun and yeah, shit talking, a lot of banter. It's just different. You step onto the mats and it's a different world.
I feel you. We'll be back. We'll be back, Bella. Okay. And yes, thank you so much for doing this podcast. I really appreciate it. It was on 2 hours notice as well. but stuff it in lockdown. That's how we roll. Like no one's doing anything anyway. It's okay. Hey, thank you everybody. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed that and see you for the next one. Oos.